honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Police. My name is Lindo Buhlekwele, and I'll be presenting the draft budget for the implementation of the IPED Act. Kindly take note that the contents of this presentation are at draft stage and are subject to the approval by the executive authority. The outline of my presentation will be as follows. A brief introduction which outlines the shift in legislative mandate that the IPED Act will bring to the department. Number two, the highlighting of additional legislative duties and obligations which will arise as a result of the IPED Act. Number three, the net results of the change in legislative requirements. Four, the reorganization process that the department is currently undergoing. Five, a summary of the estimated draft budget which will assist in the IPED implementation process. Six, a graphical representation of the estimated draft budget. Seven, highlighting of costs budgeted for, which will assist the department in achieving its new mandate. Eight, linkage of the budget to the IPED legislative requirements. And lastly, the conclusion will outline the output which the department aims to achieve. The mandate of the current department, the Independent Complaints Directorate, is governed by Chapter 10 of the SAPS Act No. 68 of 1995, which is to investigate deaths in police custody, deaths as a result of police action, criminal offences by members of the SAPS and Municipal Police Services, misconduct in terms of DVA non-compliance, and referrals from the Executive Director, Minister and MEC. The mandate of the IPED, the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, is outlined in Section 28 of the IPED Act No. 1 of 2011, which is to investigate deaths in police custody, deaths as a result of police action, the discharge of an official firearm by a police officer, rape by a police officer, rape in police custody, torture or assault by police on duty, corruption matters including systemic corruption, and referrals from the Executive Director, Minister, any MEC or the Secretariat of Police. It is clear that the mandate of the IPED will assist the department to focus on serious and priority crimes. The more focused mandate is aimed at converting the department from a general complaints body into an investigation-driven organization, the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. In terms of the IPED Act, the following additional duties and obligations will arise. There will be additional reporting obligations to the Minister, Parliament and MECs. These are all outlined in Section 7 and Section 9 of the IPED Act. In terms of referral of cases, the IPED has the obligation of referring cases to applicable bodies. The Executive Director must refer criminal offences revealed as a result of investigation to the National Prosecuting Authority for Criminal Prosecution. The Executive Director must ensure that complaints regarding disciplinary matters are referred to the National Commissioner or Provincial Commissioners where applicable. And also the Executive Director must refer criminal matters which fall outside the scope of the Directorate to the appropriate authority for further investigations in terms of applicable legislation. In terms of the notification and reporting of cases to the IPED by the SAPS, members of the SAPS must notify the Directorate of many matters referred to in Section 20H, which is the mandate of the IPED. Thus, in terms of monitoring of all notified cases by the IPED, the department needs to enhance notification receipts and monitoring processes for all the referral cases that we'll be receiving. The proceeds of the consultative forum and the management committee, which will be established as required by the IPED Act, will also need to be acted upon. There's also an emphasis on the need to increase community awareness. This is aimed in equipping the general public with the knowledge of their rights in terms of the services provided by the IPED. There will also be branding implications in terms of the change in the name of the department accompanied by the more focused mandate. And also, proper liaison and cooperation with the Secretariat of the Police is important. The changes in legislative requirements will result in the following. Number one, the renaming and reorganization of the department, an extended mandate for the department which focuses on serious and priority crimes conducted by members of SAPS and MPS, the streamlining and reorganization of the complaint handling process and investigation functions of the department, establishing formal liaison with the Secretariat of Police, the need for improved reporting and accountability practices within the department, and the need for improvement of the department's management structure. The reorganization process which the department has embarked on is summarized in this slide. It entails the following five broad steps. Step one, the department established a reorganization steering committee which led the reorganization process. The committee comprised of four sub-task teams, which are Workstream 1, Human and Physical Resources, led by Mr. Eva Loy, Workstream 2, Finance and Budget Audit, led by the CFO, myself, and in consultation with a member of Treasury. Workstream 3, Legal and Labour-related Matters, led by Mr. T. Leholo. Workstream 4, Change and Communication, led by Mr. M. Sissoko. Step 2, the department drafted a detailed IPED implementation plan. This plan identifies all the different responsibilities in terms of the IPED Act, and for each responsibility details the steps which need to be undertaken by the department to achieve their effective implementation. The implementation plan was drafted with inputs from the DPSA and National Treasury. This document was presented to the committee on the 1st of September 2010. Step 3, the draft IPED implementation costing process. The department underwent a detailed costing exercise to determine the additional costs which will arise as a result of the implementation of the IPED Act. This costing exercise was done in consultation with National Treasury, the DPSA, the IPED Reorganization Steering Committee, the Top Management Committee, and relevant responsibility managers within the department. Using the guidance of the detailed implementation plan as a base, the department identified additional cost drivers which the department will be subject to as a result of the reorganization of the department. For each cost driver, they were each then allocated to a specialist sub-team who conducted the costing of each driver. The entire process was led by the finance task team under the direction of the CFO. Regular review meetings and workshops were held by the finance task team to ensure consistency in the assumptions applied, the costs were complete, accurate, and reasonable, the costs were appropriately adjusted for when there were changes in input assumptions. Just to take note, the entire budget approach was a very conservative approach. Consultation sessions were also held with external departments to ensure that the costing approach was feasible, practical, accurate, and complete. These included the DPSA and National Treasury. Step 4. The next step is the submission of the final proclamation documents to the Minister. Together with progress of implementation, the final implementation budget, an explanatory note, the President's minutes, and a note to the President. Once the proclamation documents are approved by the Minister, they'll be submitted to the President for assent and proclamation. Once approval is obtained from the President will officially announce the date of implementation. I think the Executive Director already announced that the proposed date of implementation is the 1st of January 2011. 2012. On the date of implementation, which is the final steps, the department will then be effectively transformed into the IPED. Reflected in this slide is a summary of the estimated draft budget which will assist the department in the IPED implementation process. This budget depicts an estimate of the additional costs which will arise as a result of implementing the IPED Act. In other words, additional costs which are not part of the current operational budget for the MTF period. The costs are depicted over 4 years, including the adjustment budget for 2011-12 financial year, and the estimated amounts are as follows, plus minus 24 million in the adjustment budget, 120 million in the 2012-13 financial year, 145 million in the 2013-14 financial year, and plus minus 217 million in the 2014 financial year. All the above estimates are dependent on a number of factors, including expected human capital resources, the date of proclamation and implementation date, and approval by the executive authority. A breakdown of some of the costs per year is as follows. In the adjustment budget for 2011-12, this includes costs related to the appointment of 9 provincial heads, the staffing of the corporate governance unit in terms of M&E staff, the conversion of case analysts and monitors to investigators, and the strengthening of the office of the executive director. The 2012-13 budget includes costs related to the setup of 3 satellite offices, change and communication costs, the upgrading of level 4 posts within the organization, the strengthening of investigative staff at the provincial level, the strengthening of the investigation advisory staff and information management staff, investigator training costs, and investigation services. The 2013-14 budget includes costs related to the setup of 6 satellite offices, strengthening of investigative staff at the provinces, the strengthening of security at each of the offices, communication costs, investigator training costs, and investigation services. The 2014 budget includes costs related to the setup of 3 satellite offices, strengthening of investigative staff at the provinces, the implementation of the remaining human capital costs needed to equip the department, and the carry forward of the human capital costs from the date of first implementation. Costs which can be seen in most of the financial years include, as I've highlighted before, communication costs, investigator training costs, investigative and specialized investigative service costs, human capital costs, related IT costs, which include network and cabling in the new offices, furniture and equipment costs for new staff members, and security costs. A graphical projection of the costs shows an ascending graph. This is mainly due to human capital costs, which are carry-forward costs from the year of first implementation. They also tend to indirectly drive other related costs, such as IT costs and training costs, which go according to the number of personnel. The department aims towards achieving full implementation as soon as possible, but also realizes the need to be practical in its costing or budget expectations. Prioritized costs are budgeted for in the adjustment budget and the first full year of implementation, which is 2012-13. Main implementation costs are budgeted for in the second full year of implementation, which is 2013-14, and residual resources are budgeted for in the 2014-15 financial year. The draft IPED implementation costing includes the following costs, just to highlight a few in detail. The first, personnel costs and related expenditure. The expected increase in case intake will result in the department needing to strengthen its investigative staff establishment. The increased reporting and accountability responsibilities of the department will drive the department to ensuring we have improved and equipped management structure. Thus, adequate human capital will play an important role in assisting the department in fulfilling its mandate. Investigator training costs. As a result of the extended mandate, the department will need to ensure that all investigation staff are equipped with the knowledge and skills needed to fulfill its mandate. Investigative equipment costs. This includes all investigative equipment that the investigative staff will need to effectively conduct their duties, such as protective clothing and equipment. Specialized and investigative services. These costs include the development of an investigation manual and the use of independent pathological and forensic services for some of our more complicated investigations. Public awareness and communications costs. As mentioned earlier, this is aimed in equipping the general public of South Africa with knowledge of their rights in terms of the services provided by the IPED. There will also be branding implications in terms of the change in name of the department accompanied by the more focused mandate. The costs which have been outlined in the previous slides can be linked to the legislative requirements of the IPED Act. The previous slide highlighted the changes which will arise as a result of the change in legislative requirements. For example, the need to rename and reorganize the department can be linked to the public awareness and communication costs. This can also be linked to the human capital costs and the costs related to the establishment of satellite offices. The extended mandates with a focus on serious and priority crimes can be linked to the investigation-related costs, such as training, investigative equipment, and investigative services. The need for improved reporting and accountability practices and improved management structure can be linked to the human capital costs. In conclusion, I would like to mention the following. The more focused mandate is aimed at converting the ICD from a general complaints body into an investigative-driven organization with an emphasis on strong investigative capacity and a focus on quality service delivery. The department aims in becoming an independent institution with the necessary skills and resources to investigate serious crimes committed by members of the SAPS and Municipal Police Services. This is dependent on the department obtaining the resources needed to enable it to fulfill its mandate. I thank you, honourable members, for this opportunity to present and hope the committee will assist and support the department in the process of obtaining the relevant approval for the IPED budget. Thank you. Thank you very much, CFO. There's been a lot of added information, and we will request that you give it to the committee secretary for minutes taken, so that we cover everything that you said. We do not write what we think you said, otherwise we might misquote you. Let me take questions. If members, do we have questions? Ma'am Angie, Honorable Angie.
Thanks, Chairperson. What happens in an event where SAPS does not report a case to ICD? Will the case just die there, or what happens? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just a question in terms of the budget. I mean, we're seeing a rather big increase in the budget. I think that's putting it mildly. Can we get any indication? I'm worried in terms of, in your discussions with Treasury, what Treasury's approach to the projected budget is. And then, Chairperson, allow me to be the pig in the fairy tale. The issue of your new head office. For an organization that is struggling with finances and that needs to prioritize its funding properly, we will neglect our duty if we do not raise the issue of the head office and the media reports on the head office. And the fact that it's more than what you have budgeted for, etc. Can we get an explanation on what the situation there is, especially also with the escalation renting costs of that head office?
Chair, it strikes me that, as ever, the intention, for example, to deal with all the backlogs within 6 months. It's all very professionally done. It's all very impressive. But if the health department doesn't come to the party, you're not going to meet those targets. And this is a stumbling block. And I'm time and time and time again, the delays from post-mortems right through are sitting with the health department, which everybody knows. I mean, you actually, if you try and even phone their laboratories, you won't get through. I've tried on numerous occasions because we couldn't get a simple blood test result from a member of our own parliament who had died in a car crash. So what chances have you got? I mean, to my mind, it would be of huge assistance for this portfolio committee to request the relevant members of the health ministry to come here and give us a briefing in conjunction with yourselves to see if we can in some way unlock that logjam, because it's of no use to you when facing us, when we say, why are we looking at cases that are sitting for 2 and 3 years, and you have to quite shamefacedly say, well, they're still with the Department of Health. That's having a huge impact on what you have to do, and then your delivery levels suffer as a result. So I would indeed suggest, and I'll perhaps have a conversation later with the chairperson to see if we cannot ask members from the Ministry of Health to come in and see how we can try and ease the situation specifically with delivery for your department. Thank you.
Chairperson, I just want to the elaboration on task teams. It says there are 4 task teams. Will those task teams be permanent, or will just for the starting or reorganizing the department, or they will be permanently placed there, all of them? If they are permanently all of them will be placed there, they will be doing what? Different things of different ones. What will be their mandate at the end of the day? Thanks, Chair.
Sorry, Chair, a question that I forget. Can the Executive Director just give us an indication? I might have missed it because I've been out, but can you give us an indication in terms of the draft budget and implementation of the IPED Act, what your interaction with the Ministry is around this issue and whether the Minister has signed off on this or not?
In fact, I think that was my question, because it was in March on the 15th in that meeting that you said to us you already have co-head that document and ready for signing. That's what you said in that meeting by the minister. And to date we're saying that I understand the fact that the president assented to this act in May, but one would have expected that maybe by now we have a document. So we definitely want to know as to where is the process now with regards to that. Your slide number 7, CFO. Good, as this is a draft implementation plan, but it says note subject to change dependent on expected human resources. Mm-hmm. Date of proclamation of case approval by the executive authority. What does this mean? Are you saying that maybe you're not sure as to how many human capital do you need or human resources do you need? What does this statement mean? Because it's a disclaimer of some kind for us to take note of, but I may not understand as to what it means. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the questions. I'll deal with a few and then I'll also give the CFO opportunity. The question by the Honourable Mola Batsi with regard to requests by SAPS, we believe in terms of the new IPED Act there will be an obligation on the police to report those cases, but if there is not that reporting, in terms of Section 7 and 8, members of the public can still come to the IPED and the Executive Director to then investigate those cases. So there will be an enforcement mechanism from our side to deal with that. Then in terms of where we are in terms of the process, the status of the documents and so forth, maybe just to indicate that one of the documents that must accompany the proclamation to the President is the new staff establishment organogram. Now, that document in terms of the Public Service Act can only be signed off by the minister. It can't be signed off by the head of the department. So that will have an impact. If the minister differs maybe from our current draft, say, well, you need to cut down on administrative staff and have all investigators, of course, that will have implication for the organogram. So going forward, the minister must approve that organogram as the executive authority, and that is his duty. So I just want to give an indication with regard to that. In terms of where we are at this stage, as the CFO indicated, the proclamation, the President's minute, the note to the President and the explanatory memorandum 6 months period to advertise, do the shortlisting and do the appointment, so that when the Act kicks in, we will be able to have provincial heads and not people in acting positions. So, I mean, that is very important in terms of leadership and moving forward. The Honourable Member Kundo asked regarding the question of task teams, that they're definitely not permanent. As soon as we finish this project of the implementation, the Act kicks in, we will, of course, they will cease to exist. Then the normal new management structure that's indicated in the IPED Act must play that role of driving the process of the implementation. So they are not permanent structures. CFO.
Thank you, Jefferson. Maybe just to address the last question on the disclaimer on slide 7. It's not so much as a disclaimer, but just to emphasize the effect of that time has on any budgeting process. In some of the detailed costing, especially the human cost, human capital cost, you have the effects of expected salary increases and inflation that's been put through. So if the date of proclamation is delayed or moved, that may affect the prioritization of the hiring of certain posts. For example, the hiring of the 9 provincial heads is currently budgeted to happen at the adjustment stage. The date of proclamation moves from the proposed of 1st of January to, for example, the 1st of April, then those provincial heads can only be appointed in the 2012-13 financial year, which means the salaries that they enter the department in are different from the ones that they enter the department in if they enter in earlier, for example. There's also the effect of inflation. So this is just to highlight the effect that time has on the costs. And obviously, if the date moves earlier or later, that affects the prioritization of the costs in the different years. And then, obviously, the approval of the executive authority, we cannot act upon any budget that is not approved upon. For there are many factors, for example, the shift to IPED will affect even the structure of the current programs we have in terms of budgeting. We no longer will have the 3 programs as you know it, but they will change. And that also affects the budget that is loaded by National Treasury.
Two questions are still outstanding. The one on the National Data Office. The second one was on whether the Minister has signed off. But I just on the comment that was just made by the CFO, I mean, I think we understand what the CFO is saying and accept that. But I would like to know, what are the factors that can lead to the 1st of January not being the implementation date?
I think the biggest factor is sign-off by the appropriate levels of authority and approval of the budget. I think you also asked a question regarding the increase in the budget and Treasury's approach regarding the budget process. We've been constantly advised by Treasury to be very conservative in our budget approaching process. No wish lists, practical costs which will assist us in achieving our mandate. But they also warned us to ensure that the costing exercise is a complete one, because you don't want to have the problem that in later years you've forgotten to account for something that affects you in fulfilling your mandate, and then we come back to you and say, we can't act as a department because we don't have the following. So we try to have many exercises just checking the completeness of our costing. Are we not leaving out any costs which are critical in terms of meeting that mandate?
Listen, sorry, I see they're talking, really with all due respect, I think it's something the CEO should answer. I've asked two questions. The one is on the National Head Office, the impact thereof, and an explanation in terms of what happened there. And secondly is whether the Minister has signed off. Where are we in terms of those documents? I don't think it's something that can be answered by anybody else.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe to answer those questions directly, no, the Minister hasn't signed off on the organogram and the proclamation. And then the second issue relates to the head office. The head office is, like any government department, is the responsibility of public works, and they are responsible for the entering contracts of government departments at national level, and that is the process, and they are also responsible for providing us with the necessary funds in terms of National Treasury for that.
I'm not going to go into detail with this, but I need to raise my concern around this issue. It has become a thing about saying public works is responsible for buildings. Public works work on a needs assessment that is provided and a budget that is provided by the departments. I'm just raising that, and I think it's something that we will have to look at some point in time. This is a department who over years have been financially challenged. For years, year in and year out, the complaint has been we don't have enough money. Year in and year out, we have said prioritize. Now, we will be irresponsible just to ignore the fact that they are now in a head office that is going to cost them much more than what the original budget indicated.
Chairperson, if you give me the opportunity, I must maybe deal with the facts, and let's put it on the table. I think in 2007, or Mr. Malloy must assist me, in 2008, the then top management of ICD highlighted the need for a new head office. I think the head office was at that stage situated in two offices in Pretoria. Public Works then decided to give those two offices to other departments. I can't remember Land Affairs and one other issue. Now, I think the process to get a new office started in 2008. And the building that was put on the table by Public Works at that time was the Structura building in Sunnyside, Pretoria. And, when we looked at the building and we evaluated after the renovations, it was quite clear there was two limitations. The one was that NIA said in terms of the security-related issues in our department, ensuring that we secure, it doesn't qualify. The second issue was that there wasn't enough space. We also had to then use option at the Department of Agriculture to ensure that all our staff are nearby. So from those two perspectives, that building was not viable. Then the only option at that stage that was put on the table by Public Works Pretoria was the current building we're in 140 Vermeulen Street. Now, it was in terms of the NIA requirements acceptable, and the second issue is also there's more space available. So we also, in terms of medium to long-term planning, make provision. If the IPED kicks in, of course, there will be increase in staff members. And these contracts run for 10 years, I think. And that was the option on the table. And we can make the documentation available to this committee. I've wrote to the then DG, or the head of Public Works in Pretoria, to say, is there other alternatives on the table for us? And they said, no, that is the option. That is the option. So from a planning perspective, even if there's more space available, it also makes provision for further growth. If we, for instance, will have entered to in a building where there's limited space, that would be bad planning 2 or 3 years down the line if we look at also the escalation of staff that we envisage. So I just want to put those facts on the table, that is the reality, and we're now in 140 Vermeulen Street.
You had planned to pay 10 rand and now you are paying 20 rand. Is that a fact? Yes, according to your need analysis that you submitted to Public Works, you plan to pay 10 rand, now you're paying 20 rand and probably still not using the whole building pending any possibility of growth.
I think to avoid providing incorrect or inaccurate information to the members, we'd rather forward a document on your request, if you are happy with it, that details the details of the contract, because those contracts are handled by auxiliary service components. I don't want to speak on their behalf when I don't know the accurate details. stage in terms of the agreements, in terms of rental payments, the current payments that have occurred from the date of inception to date, and whether you envisage any problems in terms of the department. I think that would maybe assist the members more.
Thank you. We will appreciate that so that we know exactly that we're not taken by surprise to get all these reports coming from wherever. So thank you very, very much. I think we are about to close our meeting. And as we do, I just want to say two things, that according to the IPIC Act, we have said in the Act that the Directorate functions independently from the South African Police Service. And we said each organ of state must assist the Directorate to maintain its impartiality and to perform its functions effectively. The Directorate functions independently from the South African Police Service. Each organ of state must assist the Directorate to maintain its impartiality and to perform its functions effectively. And in this regard, we said, amongst other objectives of this Act, we said you have to provide for independent and impartial investigation of identified criminal offences allegedly committed by members of the South African Police Service and municipal police services or services. For us, and to us as the members of the Portfolio Committee, we believe that as IPID, so you must not forget that you are no longer IPID, you are IPID now, Letitia Banana. We really have expectations going forward. We expect that you're going to do your work without any fear or favor, and you're going to maintain your impartiality and independence. This is very crucial to us. From the discussions that we had earlier on, it is obvious that there surely will be a need for a meeting with the department, but I think in the presence of the ICD, in fact of the IPID, where we are going to discuss the crowd control issues from the side of the department, but also from the side of the IPID, I think there will be a need for such a meeting. You have promised that you're going to provide us with information first on the breakdown of cases that you deal with, and you said also you're going to provide us with information that is more reliable on the conviction rate, but also you're going to give us information on your head office lease and so on. We're not suggesting that there is anything wrong, but we think we want to be sure so that we're not taken by surprise. We will give you up to the 23rd of June that you submit this, and I hope you're going to keep to that date. So far, you've been doing very well. Thank you very much for the meeting and for the information that we have shared. We will, before the end of this year, invite you again to come and brief us on the implementation of the IPID law. So surely we will be closely monitoring that as this committee, because we don't want a situation where we have, in fact, not bill, where we have an act that is not implemented to the letter. We expect for this one, I think it is in our interest, but it is in your interest, but I think it is in the interest of the citizens of this country to have that act implemented A to Z and nothing less. So we will indeed be monitoring that at the portfolio committee. So like I'm saying, before the end of this year, we will indeed invite the IP to come and make a presentation. I just want to wish you well as you implement that act. Thank you very much. Thank you, members, for your participation. To the media that is here, thank you very much. And to the public that is here, we thank you very much for attending our meeting. And this, okay, to members of the portfolio committee, there is transport waiting for us outside that will take us to the UK embassy for our thumbprints. And it will be better that we do it today, because we still have got some other processes related to Canada. Yeah, there's something about them. It may not be as complicated as the UK one. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.